Thanks for joining us at the Business Growth Cafe, where each week we select from a menu of topics for a focused discussion with an industry expert to provide insights that can impact your business's growth. With your host, Angelo Ponzi.
I am Angelo Ponzi, your host here at the Business Growth Cafe, and thank you for joining us. There are many challenges to growing your business, and really, I don't care what industry you're in. But to make it even more difficult than it already is, now we have to deal with this COVID pandemic and a recession. Now, whether you believe it or not that we're heading into a recession, I say we are. And so you've got all these external factors that are impacting your business. You have these external challenges, such as, frankly, getting customers to come in and buy your products or services, but also the internal challenges, such as leadership, getting your employees to buy into what you're doing and really believing and standing behind your business. Well, today at the cafe, we're going to speak with Tony Penn. He's a business owner, an executive consultant, and a coach. We're going to explore a variety of topics to help get your business back on track. So don't go away. We'll be right back after this quick break. My company, The Ponzi Group, provides consulting, interim, and fractional marketing and leadership services with a focus on the strategic and analytical side of marketing. We take a holistic approach to driving business growth. Consider us your marketing architects. We use research to gather the necessary insights from your customers, prospects, the competition, and the marketplace to develop fact-based approaches to building effective and efficient growth plans. And, much like a general contractor, we partner with internal teams or carefully selected, vetted individuals and organizations to execute the strategies and plans, as well as provide oversight and management to ensure we stay on brand and plan. To learn more about our services, visit theponzigroup.com. As I mentioned, I'm joined by Tony Penn, business owner, executive coach, and consultant, to talk leadership and the what's and the hows to help you focus during these crazy times. Tony, welcome, and thank you for joining me on the show.
Thanks for having me, Angela. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I think this is going to be really fun, but before I want to put who you are and what you do in context with my listeners, and really, if I understand this correctly, you kind of have three different business groups, I'll call them, or separate businesses. You have the restaurant group, you have your business consulting, and then you have RDL training. So why don't we kind of start there and kind of give me an overview of what those different businesses are and frankly, how they all work together.
Well, it's funny that you said that because they are different, but they many times do work together because a lot of the issues that I'm dealing with different clients are very similar, even though they're different industries. So obviously have the restaurant consulting business, which has been my background for the majority of my career, having done kind of soup to nuts, everything in that industry with regard to, you know, executive leadership, ownership, you know, individual operations. I've kind of been exposed to everything in that world. And in that world, it led me to have a pretty good understanding of how to start a business, how to run a business, and how to deal with growth, and how to deal with challenges. So that's kind of segued into, you know, some of the other business consulting and executive training I've done with results-driven leadership, and then individually coaching, you know, business folks that are either starting a business or growing it. So all that time and energy and effort in building businesses over the years, I've opened probably over 50 restaurants in all different shapes and sizes over my career. So that process is really helped me and kind of launched me into being able to help others. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think when I first was introduced to you, we belong to a group called Provisors, and I think the first time you set up and mentioned the restaurant group, and then everybody I talked to would say, oh yeah, he's the restaurant guy. Well, obviously that's the hat that you seem to wear a lot, or at least the one that people recognize you as.
Well, if I could just, the reason for that is I didn't start off that way with Provisors. I started off just talking about what I do, you know, build teams, you know, help train leadership and this and that. oh, and by the way, you know, my background is restaurants. And all of a sudden it's like, restaurants? Wow, let's talk about food. So I think people kind of, you know, associated me with that because that's what they wanted to talk about all the time. So I just became the restaurant guy from it being more interesting.
And I think people can relate to it, right?
It's yeah.
that then, you know, yeah. some of the consulting work that we all do, unless you're kind of in it, there's that mystery of what you actually do to move people along or to educate or train. But if you say restaurants, everybody is eating at a restaurant and you know, they think they know.
Exactly.
You and I talked earlier and, you know, I had the opportunity to work in this field, and I'll save some of that because that's part of our conversation. But when you look, when you're on the outside looking in versus on the inside looking out, it is way different. I was told so many times that this is a very difficult business, the restaurant business. And it wasn't until I was working with clients and frankly, owned one for about 6 months that I realized how difficult it was. And it was way outside. The ownership was way outside of where I wanted to be. But, you know, I understood working behind the scenes and being involved with a lot of different groups, you know, what it really takes and who the best operators, or at least the more efficient operators can be. So, you know, one of the things I like to ask all my guests are some consistent questions because I love to hear the answers. And I find such that the diversity of guests and the diversity of answers is always interesting. So when it comes to growing your business, and you can pick whatever of the three you want to talk about, what keeps you up at night?
Well, I got to be honest with you, Angelo, that nothing really keeps me up at night. I sleep really good. I always have. You know, the stress that most people incur is a lot of times dealing with things that they don't control. And so I try to focus a lot of my energy and effort on what it is I have control of. And so if I'm able to take that, you know, those situations and kind of be able to strategize how I'm going to deal with it and, you know, and put focus and time and energy into it, it generally works out okay. It doesn't necessarily mean it's always successful, but it doesn't stress me out to where it keeps me up. Obviously I have the same challenges that a lot of people have, especially nowadays with trying to figure out, you know, how to pivot the business to make sure it fits the world we live in today. So, you know, that part of it has been very challenging. But I try to spend the day working on what I can control, and I feel a little bit more comfortable about that because, you know, I've had a lot of experience dealing, you know, with adversity in the industries that I've worked in, especially the restaurant industry, mm-hmm. which is going through its own adversity at the moment. So, that part is actually exciting to me, figuring out how to solve problems, but they have to be problems I can control, if that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. And I'm going to guess that kind of approach and kind of philosophy that you have really dovetail into your training. I mean, your leadership training, right? I mean, I think as leaders, getting people to recognize what they have control over versus what they don't right. have control over is got to be, you know, key to what you're doing.
Yeah. And I think a big part of it too is what is the outcome that you're looking for? What is the specific results? You know, we named our company Results-Driven Leadership just because it was a lot of times we focus on the process, you know, prior to what the result is that we're specifically looking for. And we kind of go backwards. It's like, if you're looking for a particular outcome to a conversation that you're having with somebody, then everything that you do up to that point has to be able to result in that outcome. So if the outcome is that you want somebody to change their behavior and be, you know, and handle things differently, you have to come at it with a specific plan as to how you're going to get that done. And certainly being emotional and isn't going to get it done. And there's just a lot of steps that you need to take and always keeping that outcome in mind. And you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but it just trying to shift people's thinking a little bit as to how to get results versus the way they've kind of done so in the past been helpful.
No, I think that's great. You know, so many times from a marketing standpoint, you know, the calls I get is I need, you know, a new social campaign or digital campaign. And my attitude is, well, let's time out. let's go into the future. Where do you want to be? And let's work backwards. Let's deconstruct that process and then determine what you really need to get there. And that's always a struggle. And I think you might find that as well, to get people to think that way, because of, you know, especially in this digital world, there's this instantaneous gratification and recognition that, you know, I need something tomorrow. Probably one of the bigger struggles I've had really throughout my career is convincing companies to do market research. And sometimes it's not even the expense, it's the time. Like, I don't have time to do it. Well, so you just want to throw all these dollars out there and hope like heck it actually works, versus spending a little time and money to make sure it's going to work, or at least up your chances. And it's always been a really interesting challenge. What is the best business advice you've ever received and or given, if it's different?
I've gotten obviously good advice from a lot of people. I've been exposed to a lot of talented people, and you know, everybody's always asking, especially in the restaurant world, what, you know, are some of the keys and secrets to success. There isn't one key to it. And so a lot of times I'm given advice on importance of preparedness and study. And you already said it, research. You know, if you look around the world today, because we get information so fast, we don't spend the time researching. And then if you, just an example in the restaurant world, we go to a restaurant on a Saturday night, you know, back in pre-pandemic at 7:30, and we're like, it's a gold mine, without really doing the research and really trying to understand all the intricacies and trying to fill in whatever the gaps that exist in your understanding and knowledge. And to your point, the best advice that I give is to educate yourself. You have to take that time, that initial upfront discipline in strategizing and planning. And it sucks, man. And none of us really like doing it. It's not part of human nature. We feel it in our heart and we want to just run out and go do it. You know, I'm so passionate about opening a restaurant. It's something I've always wanted to do. I got a nickel for every time I've heard that. And I just slam the brakes. You have to take a step back and do all of the due diligence necessary to determine, you know, if it even makes sense. Forget about your concept and where you want to go and hours of operation, all the things that are in your head right now. It's like, okay, what really makes sense for you? Let's think about it. And do you have the time? Is it part of your personal vision of what you want to do with your life? Do you have the money? Because that's number one on the list for why the things don't succeed in business. And, you know, so it's that kind of discipline is what was taught to me early on, was that I couldn't let, you need the passion and the desire, but I couldn't let that drive the process. I had to have the due diligence and understanding, most importantly, what I don't know, what I truly don't know, and fill that gap in with either research or people.
Yeah, it's and you mentioned, use the word emotional, and you know, people get passionate about their product or their service and they get a little blindsided. You know, it's just because you build it and you like it and you used it doesn't mean anybody else is going to buy it. And I remember when I was making that decision to look at a franchise, and one of the things, and you know, location, right? And we spent a ton of time looking at drive patterns, who came into the community, who left the community, you know, what the day parts were looking like before we ever actually settled on a location. And I thought we had a good one, and I think we did, but there were a lot of other issues with the parent company that forced us to sell before we even got going. So the last of my questions on this before we kind of jump into all the stuff that you do, is if your journey was a book, what would the title be?
Wow, that is loaded, Angelo. because I'm sitting here thinking about this because you didn't give me these questions ahead of time. So
I didn't.
And I know you did that on purpose. But it's, you know, the book on human connection, you know, the journey, everything that I've accomplished and everything that's been satisfying in my life up to this point is about the willingness and the desire and the ability to make a human connection. So I guess that how do you do that? You know, and some of it is how you approach it, and some of it is just innate. You were just born with that ability. I go through this all the time with clients. It's like, if you don't have that innate ability to connect with another human, you need to find somebody that will, especially if you're going to be running the show, because that's going to be the difference between your success and your, and so, you know, the title being, you know, how to make that connection. And I've been fortunate in my life and in my work to be able to do that, to where I've been able to establish great relationships, learn from a lot of great people, and in turn help people. So I don't know if that answered the question or not.
Well, no, that's good. It's about connections. I mean, it really is. It's about those relationships and having the right connections. So we talked a little bit going into this that you have several businesses. And so for clarification, this is for me, because I was obviously looking at your websites and things like that. But you also talk about restaurants, but you also talk about healthcare. I think you have another partner that talks about aerospace. I mean, so these are pretty diverse industries. And so how did you end up in these industries? Or is it really, is just circumstance that these are the people with their experience that you have on your team within these categories?
Well, it is circumstance. You know, I was working with one of the partners of Results Driven Leadership on some other, you know, peer advisory group projects that we were doing, and just locally. And then we just started talking, and he knew this other gentleman that was in the aerospace industry. And there was really no plan on, okay, you're the restaurant guy, you're the aerospace guy. It was more like, what are growing business? What are businesses needing? Because a lot of them, and healthcare is a perfect example. And we just, by the way, fell into that one. That wasn't somebody knew somebody that knew somebody, one of those things. And then we talked to them and did a whole day-long seminar for them. And they're like, oh, this sounds great. But the point of it all was that what they needed was help with some basic leadership skills and some soft skills that they weren't able to incorporate into their infrastructure because they were growing too fast. And one day, I'm a clinician, you know, doing one task. The next day, I got a team of 20. Okay. I don't know how to manage my time. I don't know how to run a meeting. I don't know how to get my employees to buy in. What am I going to do? And so we have workshops that are really centered around those universal leadership skills. And believe me, I walked into this going, hey, I've never worked in the healthcare industry. What the hell do I know? But as soon as we got in there and just started talking about the things, you know, dealing with difficult people, and they're just all big wide eye, like, wow, that makes a lot of sense. And there was never a situation that they, when they, you know, called upon us to help them, that we couldn't help them, because we were in that world of growth and having a team and being, you know, needing to be able to connect with that team and make, and get results. And there was just certain skills that you don't automatically have, that you have to be taught or that you have to be shown. So it's been great. I'm really enjoying it. We're really helping these folks out, you know, and we, now we're inspired, and we got a couple others that were, you know, non-specific industry related that we're able to help out as well. So I'm extremely motivated to keep doing it. It's great.
Well, I think you made a great point that regardless of the industry, I mean, there really are some fundamental issues that we all experience. And you know, a lot of times somebody will come, and like I had a call earlier today. I was like, you know, can you help me in the medical field? And it's like, well, I've done research in the medical field. I've worked with clients in the medical field. But you do this very specific thing. And my point to them was, it doesn't really matter.
Exactly.
Right. You have a fundamental marketing problem. You don't care about it. And, you know, so we fight all the time, argue, debate, whatever you want to use, the word you want to use with potential clients. because they're looking for somebody who grew up in an industry for 20 years. And my point is, you're getting all this experience. I mean, literally from semiconductors to ice cream and the problems that these companies have that I'm bringing to bear on something else. And that's kind of what you're doing. You're bringing all this knowledge of leadership and training and things like that. So, you know, the industry doesn't really matter. Yeah. Where do you find you spend your time? Is there a specific category or specific intrigue businesses?
It's changed since the pandemic. So that's part of it. We were doing this virtual training with this healthcare company prior to the pandemic. So we were already on Zoom. They have some different challenges that they have now, but so nothing got interrupted there. But with regard to the restaurant world, my time shifted to trying to help and trying to figure out how to help these businesses survive. They were dealt an extremely brutal blow in a world that's never been experienced. So it's not like you had a wealth of information on how to deal with it. So I spend a lot of my time putting these roundtable groups together of restaurant. And initially it was, okay, what do we do? You know, how do we, set our restaurants up to survive? How do we set them up to meet the guidelines from the state? So there was a lot of time and energy that went to that. I brought a lot of people I knew from Provisors in, attorneys, insurance, some landlords, just to kind of talk about what we could do to get through that particular time. It's kind of evolved into, okay, now what are you dealing with specifically? What are you trying to accomplish? And then let this group help you, and let myself, from a coaching perspective, help you. So it's kind of, shifted from the consulting world to the collaborative coaching world. It's going well, and people are getting a lot of value out of it because, I think restaurant people are very insular. You know, they don't like to get out there and go, hey, help me, everyone. And they think, a lot of them are very ego driven, which is how they got into the business and why they've probably been successful. But now the world's changed, and collaboration is the movement, and these people are like, hey, I don't care who helps me. I just want help. Even if it's, somebody that back in the day might've been perceived as competition, which really isn't, but it's just proving to have a tremendous amount of value to be able to bounce ideas off people. And especially when there's, 150 years of experience around the table, it's, so I've been spending a lot of time doing that.
Yeah. I want to stay on the restaurant conversation for a little bit. And so what do you think? And you can tell me first, I mean, are you working with, full service, or is primarily, right? So, my background is QSR, fast casual, casual dining, ice cream, that kind of stuff. But you're working more full service restaurants? Or?
No, it's everything. I've got full service, fine dining, quick serve, fast casual. It's okay. Again, the issues, it's one of those things where, okay, if I have a marketing issue as a fast casual business owner, the people around the table have been in the industry for a while. So there's some good input. It's not like the idea is, okay, here's the answer, now go do it. It's like, here's some ideas that spark thought. And that's what I'm seeing. It's like, oh, you know what? That makes perfect sense. Although if I did it this way, based on the fact that it's fast casual or whatever, because a lot of the people I'm working with have worked in, in different types of restaurants and different types of food service. So but the groups I'm working with are all over the board.
Okay.
Brand,
are you finding a very consistent, I don't want to say the word challenge, I'm looking for kind of operational blindness that you see these restaurants doing? I mean, it's coming to the fact is that survival, it's looking for opportunities, whether, we saw a lot of restaurants turn themselves into grocery stores, doing takeouts, all sorts of things. But that's that kind of reactive situation, right? They're reacting to survive. What are some of the proactive things you see these restaurants doing, or the huge, mistakes that they're making that, potentially could be their demise?
Well, the quick answer to that is those that reacted quickly and realized that takeout and a lot of the other ancillary opportunities that you had with meal kits and grocery stores and things like that, that was going to be, we just got to get creative with how we do it. I had a client that she went all in on the meal kits and redid her website and talked about what she was doing. She was well known as having, you know, great food, and she did very well. You know, she was did better than Survive during that time. So the point being that those that jumped on it early and figured out how to do it and how to execute it properly and effectively are the ones that have been able to carry that over still to this day. Those that hunkered down in the beginning and thought this was going to be over soon and said, hey, I can't do takeout. We're not a takeout restaurant. Or takeout is such a small percentage of what we do, or we're not set up for takeout, are the ones that are struggling more. They got their PPP money, but the PPP money running out and the business getting back to where it was are not following along the same trajectory. So once that PPP money starts running out over the next few months, you're going to see some carnage out there. A lot worse than people are aware of, and that's a whole separate topic. But it's the people that have honed and worked on that takeout and that ancillary revenue stream opportunity are the ones that are doing a lot better because, okay, we were able to open 25%. Okay, I added that in to what I was doing. I didn't stop doing what I was doing. I added that in. Okay, we got shut down on that, but now we can expand our patios. Okay, so now I'm putting my effort in that. I'm working with my landlord. I have one client that works, that's Irvine Company, who amazingly enough was extremely supportive on building out parking lots for patio space. And I'm not talking about sitting in a parking lot. I'm talking about umbrellas and planters and artificial turf and, you know, and it looks really good. But they still kept their takeout and meal kit business. And they added that to it. Now 25% dine in is back in, and so they've got that they added to it. So it's the ones that have kind of kept everything moving and worked on ways and creative ways to be able to make it execute at a higher level are the ones that are surviving this. And I have a lot of great examples of it. Just some real ingenuity and innovativeness.
Well, my next question is, tell me a success story. So why don't you go ahead and pick one or two
there's two that come to mind. Left Coast Brewery in Irvine is a perfect example where they're it's kind of a sports bar, you know, a brewery. They make their own beer there. Well, they make their own whiskey there too, in a small scale. And they have the bigger brewery down in San Clemente. But, you know, it was fast casual. You go up, it's got a full, you know, bar. You go up, you order, you sit down, they bring you your food. So they had a smaller patio in the back. But once this went down, they had to get creative on takeout. So they produced a menu of executable meal kits, feeding 4 to 5 people. This will feed your family. They also had larger ones where you could feed it for a week. And at that time, it was like, okay, and they were reasonably priced, too, when you kind of break it down. So they kind of figured out what made sense, how to package it, how to market it. They have a pretty good social media presence. I'm smacking them in the head to keep his website up to date. He initially didn't do it. You know, it was just kind of just like it was. I'm like, no, get out there. Get out front. Be out front. You're the guy running it. You know, hey, this is what we're doing. So, and then when the patio situation happened, again, I mentioned that Irvine Company helped them significantly by allowing them to do this and by, you know, giving them some of the resources to do it. And he built a beautiful patio and, you know, they social media is showing the patio and talking about the patio, still doing the meal kits, still doing takeout, significantly higher than pre-pandemic because there's still that group of people that doesn't want to, you know, sit in a restaurant. And he's there's weeks he's up over prior year, which mind boggling. And the reason for that is because takeout and delivery, you know, is so high. And I'm not talking third party delivery. because again, that's a whole nother discussion. But you know, he incentivized the process with a lot of it. I helped him with a lot of this was let's make the pickup experience great. So you don't have to spend the commissions on the third party delivery. And so he did that, and you know, and so he's doing well. I'm really proud of him. He was, you know, this is stuff that he never really had to do prior to all this going down. So,
well, I think a lot of the restaurants, especially, are doing things that they never thought. Right? It's it's very creative. There's a restaurant out by me that is probably one of the more popular ones, and all of a sudden they were, you know, they turned their site into a grocery store basically. So you could literally, instead of getting the tomahawk ribeye at the restaurant, you can now order it and cook it yourself. And then they did the patio expansion and things like that too. And they're doing well. And people had to be creative, and I think continue to be creative. Because one of the things I always look at, and maybe you've got a crystal ball, but I don't, what's going to happen tomorrow? We just don't know. And so I spend a lot of time lately doing, you know, what if scenarios. What if these things don't happen or don't come back, or this happens or that happens, or the state of California decides to do something different? You have to be prepared for these now, things that we never maybe would have thought about because we're just going well, right? When things are great, the tide rises all boats, whatever that saying happens to be. And people are doing well. And when they're doing well, they don't think they need to do all this other stuff. And then when things aren't so well, they're reactionary and scrambling, and versus they could have just been in a better situation. What, so kind of to end this discussion on restaurants, if you will, if you could give me three tips. That if there's a restaurant owner listening today, here are three things. Here's four things. I'll give you. Here's what you should do.
Don't do it. No, I'm just kidding.
Sell.
Are you talking about? They're already open, or they're thinking about it. Okay.
Well, I got to go open. Anybody's thinking about opening a restaurant right now is probably exactly right. Don't do it.
If you the tips, one of the tips I will give, utilize the resources that you have to create innovation and come up with some ideas. A lot of times restaurant owners and managers will sit in a room and bang their head up against the wall trying to figure everything out. It's just a natural human reaction. This is my deal. I'm in charge. So I got to come up with some good ideas. And I'm not saying you're not out there researching it or anything, but the bigger is gather your team. And start that collaborative process of your team works front lines, man. They got some great ideas that you have no idea. And just because, and it doesn't matter who they are, whether they're washing dishes or serving or bartending or hosting or whatever the case, cooking, there's some great ideas that people have that have, then they talk about it off to the side, or they talk about it at home with their family and friends. But you need to get that out of them. You need to create an environment where people can trust the fact that they're going to be listened to. And there's so utilize all your resources. Your team is a lot more creative and thoughtful than you think they are. I learned that back in the day, and it's more so relevant now, I think, than ever. Mm-hmm. And the other part of it is, you know, I mentioned earlier is the planning and strategic piece to this, where, you know, you mentioned it already that you're thinking, you know, what if, and because a lot of those what if things have to be done today. So like great example is if you got a patio, that's working for you, and, it's a big part of your revenue stream at this point. What are you doing if we don't get to tier three in California or tier four by the end of the year and the weather starts to turn? You know, what are you doing to be able to block out cold and block out rain and create some heat so that you have an opportunity to, you know, be able to, because if you're only at 25% and it gets cold, it's going to be very difficult. And then you're going to start making some potentially bad decisions about whether 25% is worth, you know, losing your business for or whatever, which has happened somewhat in the past. So pre-planning and pre-thinking about what those contingency issues are, and That's the other thing I'm working with clients on right now. And the whole concept of being strategic and creating that roadmap today about what it might look like in the future and having various contingencies kind of lined up, plans A, B, C, and D, or whatever you want to call it, based on what may or may not happen. Because, you know, this is going to be around for a while. There's just a pretty decent chunk of the population that is waiting for a vaccine, whether you agree with it or not, or like it, or and so that's your customer base. The I don't give a crap. I don't care what the situation is. I'm going out. It's a decent amount of people, but I don't think it's the long term going to sustain your business based on the fact that restaurants, as you know, the profitability margin is so slim that that's not enough. Patio's not enough. Takeout's not enough. 25% is not enough. It's the combination of them all that's going to help you survive, and you better come up with a plan as to how you're going to do that.
I didn't even think about the winter coming up, but you're right. I mean, people need to start thinking now how you're going to handle this if we're still here in 3 or 4 months. And you know, it's going to be 90-something today here on September 16th. But in another month, it could turn cold, and now we've got a whole different situation. Part of this tip was listen to your team, which is going to be my segue into your leadership training. Because I think a lot of times that becomes a huge example of who's listening to who and where does that start, right? Because you talk about on your website about a 5-step process to getting employees to buy into the business. But it's a little bit of the chicken or the egg for me. And so is it start at the top with leadership and work its way down? Or are we talking about just really the base, or back to the word you used, a collaboration and a combination of top down, bottom up? Because without leadership buying into it, it doesn't really matter, because the employees will know. I've worked for companies where, you know, the employees, you could talk to them and they'd communicate. And then the leader would walk in the door and say the complete opposite and, you know, just kind of destroy everything that was going on. So how do you see this in your work as far as leadership training versus employee training?
To your point, it's all related with regard to some of the things we've already talked about, which has to do with that making a real connection with people, as opposed to when you're in a leadership position, a lot of times it's just been created through experience over the years that I listen to you because you're the leader, but do I really listen? And am I really buying into what you're saying? Or is it just like, yes, boss, yes, boss, I got it. So the training is universal with regard to how do I get people to buy in, you know, and at any level. And a lot of that has to do with, obviously, the clarity of the message. That's kind of the first thing, is making sure, what is the standard? What are we looking for? You know, what do we want to accomplish at any level? And why is that important? And how does that affect you? That's the other thing that gets left out all the time. What is in it for you? Mm-hmm. And so most people have trouble communicating that, which leads to the second step, which is that level of communication. Which you're, it's not you dictating, here's what the standards are. It's you having a collaborative conversation. Here's kind of what the standard is. Let's get creative. How do we get there? Because a lot of times what happens is we create a standard. It doesn't happen. We lower the standard so that the employee base or whoever it is we're dealing with can get there. As opposed to, let's put the time in and come up with some creative ideas on how we're going to get there. Let's not lower it. Let's just, you know, why don't you tell me, what do you need from me to be able to perform at that level? What can I do? How do I need to change? And if you're honest about it and you create an environment where people can trust that you're sincere, they're going to start telling you. I would go into restaurants and, you know, oh, here comes, you know, when I was an executive VP, oh, here comes the big bad VP, you know, but I wouldn't go in and be like, oh, hey, what are we doing tonight to, you know, make sure that the customer is happy? I go in and start asking them what's going on in their personal life. You know, mm-hmm. How's the family? How are things going? You know, I understand your daughter's not, you know, been sick. You know, just things that people don't normally expect that builds that environment of trust and honesty. So then when I do go in there after that, they come up to me and they'll tell me exactly what's going on because they trust me. The guy seems to care, you know? So that's the level of trust and communication that's necessary to be able to get that buy-in. And then after that, then accountability becomes a little bit easier. It's like, okay, we're very clear. We've talked about everything we need. What's the problem now? And then the final part of that is consequence. And because if you go through all this process and there's never a consequence when it's not being met, then it just kind of goes out the window. And you mentioned that boss that comes in, you know, if you're saying one thing and doing something else, it's just, you might as well not say anything. It's worse. So, and the consequence being negative if things aren't working out, and positive if they are, and being able to celebrate victory and things like that. So that's a big part. Everything that we talk about kind of all comes into, okay, are people actually listening to you? Do they actually believe you? Do they think you're sincere? Because then you can make mistakes and be vulnerable, and people are like, that's cool. You know, I appreciate that.
Well, you mentioned, you used the word in the very beginning of this conversation, relationships. And really, it's about a relationship between the employer and the employees. And again, without the employees, I don't care how great your business is, so to speak. If you don't have people running it for you, then you don't have a business. And just like if you don't have customers, right? So it is up and down. One of the things that I always work with my clients is about internal communications. Because it's important, and I've had experience when I'd walk down the hallway, if you will, and start talking to somebody on the team and, hey, what do you think about this or that? And they look at me and say, I have no idea what you're talking about. It's pretty sad because they're walking out the door tonight and they won't be able to talk about all the wonderful things, right? So it's been mind-boggling when that happens. And the right-hand, left-hand kind of thing going on. We're kind of coming down to an end. I have one last question before we sign off here. And I think you've said it, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What gets you out of bed in the morning? What inspires you to get up and do what you do?
I think, you know, when you're younger, you're a little more, your head's down a little more, and you're kind of grinding away trying to accomplish the tasks of the day. And what the end result of that, whenever you are successful, however you are successful, is that's when it kind of, as you get older, there's certain revelations. And one of the revelations for me was I like seeing people succeed. I enjoy when people are successful and I've helped them do that. And if success is just to get through that day and be successful, like it's been through this freaking pandemic, it's like when I see these people survive and thrive, and I've helped them to some degree to get there, that brings me a lot of joy and a lot of pleasure. And it's really more about that than even the money side of it. The money kind of will come along, but when I can get up and help people, that gets me fired up. I enjoy that.
Yeah, it does. And actually it's kind of my answer too. There's nothing for me, you know, in judging success is for the client. The client's successful, right? And we've done our job. I was in a meeting about 6 months ago, I guess it was now, kind of a was a board meeting, but it was the last live board meeting we had. And the client or that I'm a board member on, but I also in previous couple of years, I was also their CMO and their consultant. And he turned to me in the meeting, and it had been about 6 months since I my contract ended. He turned to me and said, "See, we're implementing your plan." I said, "Thank you." And see, you're on track. Unfortunately, yeah. COVID's knocked them off track, but they were on track to going into year three, right on plan and doing well because they were executing. And now, of course, things are a little bit different. Well, this has been a great conversation. We covered a whole lot of topics. And really some great nuggets in there for the listeners. And again, I always learn in these, and it's great. And we explored kind of both sides or two sides of your businesses. So thank you for sharing. It's been a lot of fun. So why don't you tell the audience how they can reach you, your website, your LinkedIn, all that good stuff.
Yeah, just come over to my house. I live in Costa Mesa, and you know, we'll have a party in the backyard.
But, yeah, social distance, though, right?
Of course, duh. I have a restaurant website and a business consulting website, but it's all on penultimateconsulting.com. That's where you can find everything you need. Penultimateconsulting.com, and if you want to get a hold of me personally, it's pen@penultimateconsulting.com, and or if you want to call me, you can call me 818-510-1753. So, and 24/7. No, I'm kidding, because I'm sleeping well. Thank you. And thanks for having me, Angela. I appreciate it. I really do. It's great talking to you. Enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate it. And thank you for joining us at the cafe today. Now, if your business needs a CMO or senior marketing leadership, but you're not quite ready for a full-time person yet, connect with me to find out more about my fractional interim consulting services, or visit theponzigroup.com to find out a variety of resources, blogs, videos, ebooks, and certainly connect with me on LinkedIn. And lastly, if you're a subscriber to the show, please let others know about this show so they can subscribe too to benefit from the great content like we heard today with Tony. You can sign up at thebusinessgrowthcafe.com or on any podcast platform you like to listen to. And don't forget to join me next week at the Business Growth Cafe. And Tony, thank you so much.
Thanks, Angelo. Appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you for listening to today's discussion at the Business Growth Cafe with your host, Angelo Ponzi. Take a moment to subscribe to this podcast and visit our website at www.businessgrowthcafe.com. Read Angelo Ponzi's blogs at www.theponzigroup.com.